And we are back.
We're back, baby! Sorry for the break, ladies and gentlemen. We both went on vacations. And I'll get more into mine in depth because it relates to what we're talking about today, which is, of course, The Shining and Dr. Sleep we're going to talk about as well. But the world wants to know the highlight of Hawaii. Did you see dinosaurs or what?
No.
No dinos.
No dinosaurs, but a lot of the areas we were in, they're like, oh yeah, and they filmed the scene where they pushed the T-Rex pushed the car off the ledge right there, and you're like, that's amazing, that's
really
awesome. I only found out afterwards.
Bothered me and JP because it doesn't seem like there should be that drop there based on how the T-Rex comes out, you know, right, of the fence, and then like just a few feet forward, and then the car is tumbling.
Yeah, I agree. Yard,
that doesn't
line up.
I didn't get that. So what did it look like then?
It was flat. I mean, there was one area where there's like a big cavernous area, but
okay,
it didn't look exactly like it did in the film, obviously, but it's beautiful. It's beautiful there.
Did anything like really take you back to the film? Did you really?
I think the Nepali coast, which is the west coast of the island, we took a catamaran like boat ride up that coast. And when you're looking at, I took a lot of video of it, but you're looking up there, you basically are transported to the intro helicopter flying through the scene. Yeah.
Gotta love that. Well, that's awesome.
It's pretty gorgeous.
But beyond that, what was the highlight of Hawaii? How long were you there?
I mean, we were there 9 days.
Damn.
I know. It flew by too. I think the highlight there was finally just sitting around and doing nothing. Just relaxing. Not looking at emails. That was pretty
Chinese amazing. Fun Hawaiian foods.
Oh yeah. You gotta try the poke bowls there. The fish there is amazing and obviously as fresh as it could be. Yeah.
Very nice.
Did a luau. Yeah, did all the delicious foods.
Huh. Well, it sounds lovely. I hope to get there eventually someday myself. Very jealous, very jealous. Yeah. I hit up some Colorado again. I've been there a bajillion times, but the girlfriend hadn't, and she was desperate for some mountains. And we had a couple of reasons to go. First night, Postal Service and Death Cab for Cutie concert. That was phenomenal. The following day.
Sounds like a great concert.
Have you heard of this strange, like, it's kind of like an adult Chuck E. Cheese. It's called Meow Wolf. It's this, there's multiple ones in different cities, but this one has like three stories of just weird, interactive, you know, like House of Mirrors zones where like you're pressing buttons everywhere. And there was like some hunt too, where you're looking for these little screens and you get like, It's an adult Chuck E. Cheese with lots of like crazy, beautiful art and, you know, stuff that you crawl into as an adult and stuff. It's very immersive and otherworldly. It's a very surreal space.
I would love that. I would love to go there.
Yeah. Denver has one. Las Vegas also has one. I know that. And I'm pretty sure New York does. I give it a 5 thumbs up there, that Meow Wolf. Wow.
Meow Wolf it is.
I have a tendency to call it Meow Cat, obviously.
That sounds like the upcoming movie Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh my goodness, yes. Actually, there is a specific area in Meow Wolf that is like a Five Nights at Freddy's, this like creepy ass like cheese monster. They do it up. Yeah, it's very cool. It was kind of scary. It does relate to this. But most significantly to the cast is we went to Estes Park, and while I'd been to Colorado a bajillion times, never been to Estes Park, and this is where the Stanley Hotel is. And the Stanley Hotel is related to The Shining, and is not the exact hotel that was used. In fact, I think that was a set. It's I think it's in England, the actual building, is it?
Actually, a lot of the exteriors, I think, were filmed in Oregon. And then like Oregon. The stuff inside was filmed because Kubrick wouldn't fly. So I think they did the exteriors like in Upper Oregon, almost Washington area.
A lot was in England, though, is what I remember reading.
Right. Because Kubrick refused to fly anywhere. He basically had all of his productions built on a set which is really amazing when you rewatch The Shining and you see the nods to Apollo 11 and the moon landing.
Yes. It
being filmed on a set. There's so many things in the background. Even in the kitchen, I finally caught there's a Tang up on the shelves.
Isn't there a whole documentary called Room 237 that deals with how ultimately this was his way of saying that it was fake? But
And apparently,
what's that about? I mean,
the hotel didn't really happen. 237. They changed it. It was 217, and the hotel was like, we don't want you to do that because people may not want to stay there. So he made up 237, which didn't exist.
Interesting. Well, the Stanley Hotel is the hotel that Stephen King came up with the idea for it. And I mean, it's actually a really interesting story. We went on this tour. We kind of had let's call him Green. Okay. He was a little wet behind the ears, right? He was you could tell he was struggling to remember lines. He didn't have the normal tour guide vibe. He had like an actor vibe while being a tour guide. So like you saw him just like trying to remember. Anyways, what I found really interesting is that King and his wife, I guess, were having like marital issues or whatever, and they were going to go to a different hotel in Estes, but because of this snowstorm, they were diverted to the Stanley Hotel, and it was the last night that the hotel was even open, and there was nobody else in the hotel other than King, and they couldn't like turn him away. They didn't necessarily want anyone there because they didn't have full staff or anything. So they did let him stay there, and then he had run of the entire hotel. Just imagine like Jack Nicholson is walking around all alone. This is where he gets the inspiration. And he did stay in room 217 in the Stanley Hotel. Right. And there's a little balcony there that you can see where it all went down. But of course, this is the hotel that they do use for the miniseries with that amazing actor from Wings. What's that guy?
Stephen Weber.
Huge Stephen Weber. It's just so hard to live up to Jack Nicholson, you know? I do find it interesting that Stephen King does prefer the miniseries.
Well, closer, truer to the book, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's closer, truer to the book. It's just not half as beautiful. It's not half as scary. It's so much longer. But you're absolutely right. It is closer to the book. And the Tella series was – the scripts were actually written by King. So, of course, he's going to have bias to that.
Yeah.
You know much about the kind of strife between Kubrick and King when it came to this?
Not in great detail. I know that King was very displeased with the direction Kubrick took it, which, I mean, that's probably one of the greatest arguments of all time because it's one of the most beautiful the cinematography in The Shining is gorgeous. People, you know, say it's one of the greatest horror films of all time, and I would agree with that. But King thought otherwise because it wasn't true to what, you know, his book was.
And yeah.
Kubrick took liberties and
I saw an interesting interview with him and Letterman, like the year that it came out, within weeks of it coming out. Letterman was kind of like bringing up the fact that everything he wanted. And he's like, well, it's just one of those things. You got to let your kid
darlings,
go, you know what I mean?
Kill your darlings.
Exactly. Baby birds will fly, you know? So I also found it interesting how Kubrick even came about wanting to do this adaptation. Apparently because he had so little success with his previous film in 75, because of course The Shining was released in 1980. He did Barry Lyndon. Have you seen this?
No, but Barry Lyndon is one of those movies that had a terrible opening and over time has become one of the most, you know, cult favorites of just cinema in general.
I'm ashamed I haven't seen it. There's a couple Kubrick films that I haven't seen, and that there's no excuse for it. I'm going to have to get on that. But you're absolutely right. It failed at the box office. So I guess he just demanded piles and piles of horror books because he wanted his next one to be a success. You know, around this time, money's being made with horror more than other genres at this stage. And then, you know what? The Shining's the one that did it for him. I guess his secretary heard book after book just being whipped at the wall that he was rejecting at the time. But yeah, I mean, I got a quote here from him. Kubrick stated that there's something inherently wrong with the human personality and that there's an evil side to it. And one of the things that horror stories can do is show us that archetypes of the unconscious, and we can see the dark side without having to confront it directly. And of course, there's a dark side to the hotel itself. The hotel is a character.
Yeah. The hotel's a character. Going off of that quote, I'd say that what the movie is about mostly is about alcoholism and basically a family being destroyed, which were very, very human, very human traits.
Right. And of course, the domestic abuse issue.
Right.
That is actually they kind of all over it in Kubrick's version. But I do find it really interesting that Jack Torrance's character in the book, I guess, and in the teleseries, he was a teacher and he like beat up a kid. He beat up one of his students and he got fired.
Right. And in the movie, they make it about him breaking Danny's arm.
Right. But I think he still did do that to Danny as well. There was the jerk.
Oh, okay. In addition to...
It just happened, the reason he needed that job, because that really wasn't expressly put out there, I feel like, in the Kubrick one. Okay. Why was he looking for
work? Right, right.
So I found that really interesting that he does have anger issues too, and that did relate back to the alcoholism, which is played up, I think, more in the teleseries. You're absolutely right. It is central to Kubrick's, but they dwell on it because they had... 6 hours to do it. So they did.
Right.
But yeah, I let me go back and talk a little bit more about this, this tour here at the Stanley Hotel. Yeah,
please.
Of course there was no maze like we see in the film. But they do have this little gimpy one there for you. I guess, so many people had gone there, demanded it. So they did put up a little maze. I tell you what, it was cool having seen the miniseries prior, because the hotel is beautiful. And like you walk in there and you see the elevator that's really central to the scene. You could see the walk up. It's picturesque. And this kid, I tell you what, he really put it on a show. It was one of those things like he had these punchlines, and he built to them. And then, like, nobody was laughing. And at one point, I kind of just started laughing because I'm looking at my buddy who I'm there with, and you could just tell he was having a miserable time. His girlfriend hadn't even seen The Shining. I don't know why they freaking even came, right, other than to hang with us. But it was pretty cool. And, of course, they encourage you to, like, take pictures everywhere to try and see something. And then they build lore. Around a certain spirit that lives in the caretaker's house. It was a little weird because they do pack like 10 people in these really small rooms. And there are a couple of replicas of some of the rooms in the OG Shining. So it's kind of weird. It's where the teleseries takes place. But then within this tour, they have remade the bathroom from Kubrick's, literally looks like, the bathroom with the creepy lady coming for Danny. And they had the bedroom as well that was replicated pretty good. I don't know. It was fun. But would I suggest it to anyone who's not a diehard Shining fan? Not sure. We did want to stay there, but it did actually, the place has kind of bad reviews for 350 bones. We're like, ironically, let's just go down the block and just do the tour.
It doesn't have bad reviews because of the paranormal. It's just the staff.
No. It's the staff and there's no AC. That's really tragic.
Only stay there during the winter, really.
Yeah, no, it was an experience. I'm glad we did it 100%. And this goofball really, really kind of like made it with his ridiculousness. I saw like a young me in the kid. You know what I mean? It was like me and our College of DuPage days, or you're just trying to be extra hammy.
You're on and like everything's an audition.
Yes. And then it's super awkward at the end. He busts out his QR code or whatever. tips. You guys can tip me now. It was so bad.
Encourage people. People should want to do it. People are like, that was great. We would like to tip you. Can we tip you? And then you're like, oh, yes. Yeah, actually, sure.
No, it was super awkward. Please the tip only me. Other kind of cool thing that they did have was somebody anonymously donated one of the axes from the original
from the film
filming. And they had this thing in like
the
Kubrick one. Wow. In the miniseries, they don't even have an axe. There's no axe because in the book he uses a croquet mallet.
Oh, okay.
And it just really takes away a lot of the menacing. I get what he was doing there because, you know, anyone who could stay at this hotel and is not not the caretaker is going to be pretty affluent. So croquet, you know, you get that kind of satiric vibe going on with it. But when he's carrying around a croquet mallet, and it's Steven Weber, who I really think is a great comedic actor, and I've seen him in, what is it, the violin one or something? He's in a recent horror film that's really good.
Yeah.
You know the one Netflix I'm talking about?
The
Violinist
movie.
Or something?
Yeah.
And it has the girl from Girls in it.
Yep. Allison.
The daughter Williams. Of the NBC host.
Allison Williams, yeah.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
You know what? It's just one of those things. Maybe if you see it first and then watch The Shining, you might enjoy it. But it was kind of funny. At the end of the tour, he's like, he warned us all there's going to be a big surprise at the end. So he has his one QR code for his tips. And then the other one is so you can watch the miniseries for free. I had seen it, so that wasn't too
bad.
Thrilling for me. But
I remember most miniseries when they came out to television for Stephen King specifically.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And I remember watching the first episode of that and I don't remember. I mean, I was maybe too young, not interested, and I'd seen the original, but something, this is, you know, like a side note here, but speaking of Stephen King miniseries, did you hear that there is going to be another Langoliers movie?
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like an actual movie, not a miniseries. Honestly, we were just talking about this over the weekend because that's my favorite, you know, and it's so cheesy of all the miniseries. And I've actually read that short story, too. It's so fun. And with all this stuff they're talking about now, I don't know if you saw this spoof, but you know, that plane that disappeared. That's very Langoliers-esque. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean? Just vanished and, you know. Aliens, maybe? Talk about aliens in the next cast. But one of the other really noticeable differences between Kubrick's and the miniseries is there's no maze in the miniseries because there's no maze in the book. That is something that Kubrick decided. And to me, it's absolutely
iconic.
Like essential, you know?
Iconic.
In the book and miniseries, instead of the maze, there are topiary animals that attack them. And maybe in the book I could see that maybe working, but this is 1997 graphics and it just looks really, really bad. It's horrible. That being said, if you remember the Langoliers, it's so fun conceptually, but then when you actually see these things, they're kind of goofy looking, right?
Yep.
I mean, just like kind of fuzzballs or like razor staticky things. How would you even describe those?
I don't know, but I think Kubrick took the right choice.
Yeah.
Of inventing something new and who knows where he came up with that, but that's really, really like iconic cinema right there.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. What would that movie be without that? They were going to try and do the topiary stuff, but I think they acknowledged in 1980 they did not have that capacity.
I bet Kubrick was also not interested in doing that. I bet he looked at that and he's like, we're not doing that. It's completely different than the film I'm making, and that doesn't make any sense. So I think as angry or upset as Stephen King was for the adaptation, you know, I think you can't be upset. I mean, if the movie stunk, you could have been even more upset. But people love this movie. It is some people's favorite movie of all time.
Understandably.
Yeah.
And I think it has endless rewatchability. I mean, every one of the scenes is just so like breathtaking. The cinematography. I mean, it still bleeds into pop culture today with that latest. What was that? Ready Player One. There's a whole find the key sequence that they go through which the Shining Hotel.
So fun.
Which was a blast. I
mean, think about how many times The Simpsons has done it. You know, like there's the references to The Shining or Over the Top, but you're right. Almost every scene is its own like perfect little masterpiece from, you know, the weird, some of the stuff in there is weird with the man in the bear suit. But what I'm talking about,
you know, like that is weird.
Jack at the bar, Jack in the bathroom, like Jack breaking down the door. Have you ever seen those behind the scenes footage of Jack Nicholson hyping himself up to
a little bit? Yes, I have seen that.
It's so much fun to just even see that moment before. He's getting crazy.
Right. There's something I actually did want to ask you about, because it's widely known that Kubrick really went to extremes with Shelley Duvall. Right. And really did try to scare her maybe to a point
too much.
She didn't actually act after that.
Right.
What's your take on that? I mean, does that take away from it a little bit, knowing that there was kind of like abuse? I don't think he could do that now.
You hear specific famous directors. I mean, Tarantino has this story with Uma Thurman pushing things too far. I don't think.
Uma Thurman, really? That's interesting.
Yeah, it does. It does hurt when you find out like a director needed to do something. It's almost not having the faith in the actor to deliver in the performance. So you have to go above and beyond. Or was he planning this the entire time to do this? It's psychologically damaging.
Yeah, I found it interesting that she wasn't initially his number one choice. Nicholson was, but he'd also considered De Niro. Can you imagine this with De Niro?
No. As much as I love De Niro, and he would have done a great job, but it would have been a different character.
I agree. Yeah. Robin Williams was up for it.
I just laugh at that one. We all know Robin Williams can act, but people didn't give him a shot with drama until much later in his career. Could have changed his whole career if he was Jack Torrance.
I guess Harrison Ford was also on the docket, but Stephen King didn't. He put a nix to the aforementioned ones. Chris Christopherson was the backup. If Nicholson didn't take it, it was going to Christopherson. And I think that's the second best choice for it. I could see that working.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
But in the case of Shelley Duvall, Jessica Lange was supposed to be
brilliant actor.
Do you think it would have been as effective? Because what I really like about it is how fragile Shelley Duvall does come off, and she doesn't seem like an actress. You know what I mean? She's
agreed.
Like, seems like a real person getting messed with.
Yeah, she's almost us. You know.
Yeah,
her character is almost us, as in, you know, watching things slowly unfold into madness. I thought she did a fantastic job. I don't know. You know, I just don't like when filmmakers make things unsafe. It should be a safe space to be a performer.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think he would have done that to Jessica Lange. I don't think he would be able to. You know, she's just too strong. I don't see that ever happening.
She took advantage of Shelley Duvall's probably kindness.
Is she related to Robert Duvall?
I don't believe so.
No. Okay.
I don't believe so.
Interesting. Do you know about the alternate ending that was initially supposed to be there?
You know what? I would love a refresher. I feel like I have.
I'm glad they cut it because it ends so perfectly, if you ask me. But we get another scene where Wendy's in the hospital. She's on the bed. And the guy who runs the hotel, we see at the beginning, who gives Nicholson the job, is there like consoling her. And Danny's there just traumatized. And it's just kind of like, why? It's like the denouement right. that wasn't necessary, especially considering Dr. Sleep, which I think we should maybe well, start talking about.
Something I did hear was I thought I heard that in the book, the Overlook burns down in the original book.
Yes. Okay. You're so absolutely right. It does.
Dr. Sleep's third act.
Absolutely true. It burns down because Nicholson actually struggles with his demons to the point that he blows up the boiler to kind of like save his yeah. family versus trying to destroy them without any mercy. Right. But yeah, it does burn down. But Dr. Sleep would have been completely. That's what I'm curious about now in the book of Dr. Sleep as well, because as for those who have seen it, no, we go back to that hotel at the end of Dr. Sleep.
And it's supposed to be basically the land, like as if, you know, you're standing in what was the Overlook and the place is still haunted, but these, you know, the evil never really got to leave. It's just still there. So I think.
Right. That being said, what's his name? Dick Halloran, right? Played by Scatman Crothers and then mm-hmm. played equally as awesome by Melvin Van Peebles in the miniseries. I got to say, that was probably my favorite of the casting in the miniseries. What's her name? Rebecca Romaine? What is it? I can't think of her name now.
From Dr. Sleep, Rebecca Ferguson? Or are you talking about
this? No, miniseries? No. I'm trying to think of who played Wendy in the miniseries, and it's escaping me. Rebecca De Mornay. There it is. Yes, De Mornay. Okay. It was one of those things too. Like you got such pretty people in the miniseries relative to Jack Nicholson's he's not a handsome man, from my opinion. He's an amazing actor and yeah. has such character in his face. But of course, Steven Webber, he was a sitcom star. And
yeah.
Rebecca Dormay, I can't say her name for the life.
Rebecca De Mornay.
De Mornay. Was definitely in a different sort of league of casting. Yeah. That didn't work. It didn't work. I didn't have any like sympathy for her relative.
I think that's, you know, that still happens a lot in Hollywood today, but especially the 90s. I don't think you had a lot of opportunities for character actors to right. play major roles. You had yes. to be cover of the magazine good looking.
Yeah.
Not Which as exciting.
Took away from it. And the kid who plays Danny, you'd recognize he was in Little Rascals. Goofy was goofy. You know, Danny's solemnness in Kubrick's version.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is so good. But this kid uh-huh. was kind of like, he's got a bowl cut hair. Like, I guess Kubrick's Danny kind of does, but it's more of like a shaggy. Yeah. This one is just, he just more looks like a little dweeb, you know? From
Three Stooges.
Yes.
At least, yeah, Danny's from 1980 was very popular in the time.
Oh, interesting. Outtakes of the opening panorama shots were later used by Ridley Scott for the closing moments of the original cut of Blade Runner. So that's kind of interesting. I had no idea about that one.
No.
So, yeah, let's get a little deeper into Dr. Sleep here. Sure. I hadn't seen Rebecca Ferguson prior to that, and I feel like she's popping up in everything now.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think this kind of put her on the map, even though this movie was also not a success.
I mean, it did make a little bit of money, but it didn't have that buzz, you know, a lot of people, I think it just fell under their radar and it sucks. Cause we're talking about Mike Flanagan here, who we're going to eventually talk about House of Usher and this man knows what he's doing. Yeah. I think he was the perfect choice for it. Did you watch the regular or the director's cut?
I've only ever seen the theatrical, never the director's cut.
I watched the director's cut and it's 3 hours. So, I don't know what would have been cut though. I'm really kind of curious now to go back and see what was sliced off. I'm going to be honest with you. The first time I saw it, I think it was the theatrical cut and I didn't really like it the first time. Watching the director's cut, I love it now. You know, I actually have grown to really appreciate it. But for some reason, when it came out there at the end of 2019, right before the pandemic, it just didn't hit. I felt like it was a little jarring in the way that it moved. You know, it bounced back back and forth from time. And then, of course, with our group called, what is it? The True Knot. Vampire. They're essentially vampires.
They have a really cool story. But yeah, they are essentially vampires sucking the life out of people because they can live for millennia.
Right. You got Grandpa in there who apparently was there for the Colosseum and stuff, you know, to see people fighting the Colosseum. So, yeah, I do find that really fascinating. Here's a question, though. We see Dick Halloran again with Danny outside of the hotel. So by that logic, they can leave the hotel because that is where he was killed. If we're running with the Kubrick's version, which I think we are, because in the miniseries, he doesn't die.
Right.
He's just hit a couple times with the croquet mallet and he's fine.
That's really,
that's what I'm really curious. What kind of diverges between the book Dr. Sleep and then the movie? Right. Because, you know, Flanagan kind of, I feel like, had to appease everybody.
There's behind the scenes footage. Like Stephen King was on set for Dr. Sleep too. And this
awesome.
Yeah. This adaptation, and then of course, was pretty close to the book.
He blows up the boiler at the end of Dr. Sleep. So we're getting that original ending that Stephen King wanted. So he was doing kind of like a service to, Mr. King
fixing,
there.
Fixing things for King.
What worked for you the most in this one?
I thought the character development was really, really good in this movie. I think this movie, I think it's underrated. I think the first two acts do such a good job of setting up its own story, developing characters, and not doing any fan service where, you know, like I imagine people right out of the gate wanted Shining stuff, but you needed to wait until the third act to really earn it. You know, you needed to be patient with the story, and it is long and it does have its slower moments, but I think the characters were so good. And my God, I don't say this a lot about child actors, but Abra is fantastic. She's so good. So much so that Mike Flanagan has now pulled her into his, you know, his network, and she's in House of Usher.
Yes, she's great in that one, too. There's a lot of actually people in House of Usher.
So many people
were in this puppy. Bruce Greenwood, he's the AA, you know, guy. Henry Thomas is Jack Nicholson in this thing. He's the bartender. And from the side, he looks so much like him.
I know.
Dead on, not quite as much, but I was impressed with how much he was able to pull that off. Henry Thomas has been coming out swinging lately. He's just amazing in Usher. I can't wait to talk about that double.
Yeah. So did you, just backing up really quick, did you see Gerald's Game? Because this is another Stephen King adaptation that Mike Flanagan worked on first. And he's got,
I love that movie,
Carla Gugino. He's got Bruce Greenwood. He's got the actor who plays Grandpa, who plays the Moonlight Man in Gerald's Game. And I love that he brings actors around with him. He does such a good job with it.
Yeah, he's got some awesome players that are working hard for him. And Gerald's Game is something we should probably talk about as well at some point. Yeah. Because it's so underrated, so great. And in House of Usher, there's a little Easter egg that there's a TV on in the background and there's Gerald's Game on it, like the Netflix titles there.
Speaking of fan, Mike Flanagan added a ton of the tower references in Dr. Sleep.
Huh.
I don't know how familiar you are with the
tower. I'm not very familiar. Is that the one with McConaughey and Idris?
Yes, but the book series is one of those ones that King wrote, I think, under his pseudonym. I forget his other writing name originally. And then he has references. It's so interesting that he chose that to really pepper out throughout this movie. And I know a lot of people who adapt Stephen King stuff like to pull in from his world. So I just thought, like, even the name of the bus that Danny rides into this new town, I think it says T-E-T, or something. Really? That's from the Gunslinger series, The Tower. And there's, I think at the beginning of the movie, when we see Rose, the hat, they're on land that is the same company that like owns everything in the tower.
Really?
It's so interesting that he wanted to do this.
Yeah, because I remember not loving that movie. I just don't remember anything about it. I think
a good job. They needed like a Mike Flanagan to do it.
Yeah, I don't remember a thing. And I think it was just bad casting, right? Matthew McConaughey-wise.
Yeah. Aegis Elba was great, but yeah.
We have such an amazing villain in this, Rose the Hat. She's so good. Because the only thing else I've really have seen her develop a character in is this new TV series where it's Silo. I think it's Silo, where everyone lives underground.
Yep.
Great show. She's the lead of that. It was good, yeah. But it was such a dichotomy to see her kind of the hero in that and to be this like kid murderer, essentially. This opening sequence here in Dr. Sleep is pretty terrifying if you think about it, because this poor little girl, Violet, is just surrounded by all these vampires.
This cult.
Then when we see what they do to what's his face? Jacob Tremblay later, the little baseball kid. It's horrifying. And it's kind of funny. Go back to that opening sequence where she's like, she just wanders off. I was immediately brought back to the opening of The Lost World, you know, where the kid kind of wanders off instead of dealing with the little dinos, compies. She's dealing with the shining vampires.
The knot.
Pretty horrific. Yeah.
I mean, what an interesting group of people that King created here, and I really, really want to see more from it. Even though this movie didn't do well, and they were supposed to do a prequel from this based off of Dick Halloran. They were supposed to do like an origin story for Dick, but I don't know if it'll happen now because this.
I think maybe they could run with what's her name, Abra, and then could bring back Danny now as her Dick Halloran that's helping her along. Because at the end, she does mention, I was just talking to Danny. And we go on after this life. That was a little cheesy. I didn't need that. But
I mean, I really think this story and this universe, because it spans from 1980 to the present, really would be good TV show material. Like you could do... I think there's so much going on. You almost need to.
Yeah, that's why I think in his director's cut, it did feel like a short Netflix miniseries by Flanagan in a way. Yeah. You know, I could see how the chapters could have been cut up into episodes and it might have actually worked better. Because it's hard to ask somebody to sit for 3 hours of a film.
Sure is.
But to then bring it back at the end. We're there on the stairs again. We're there with the axe. The tables have turned. You got the woman who's now the mega villain. Mm-hmm. And the kid is not just kind of like helpless like Danny kind of is. The exception of the ability to shine. Danny's not as formidable as Abra at all.
Oh, I was going to say, she's much stronger with the shine than Danny ever was.
That's true. Yeah. That's kind of interesting. They all have kind of different powers, right? A little bit, because what's her name? Rose the Hat can astral project.
Yeah.
Was it clear what are some of the other one powers?
Snakebite was able to like basically put a trance on people.
Yes, right.
Crow Daddy didn't have powers, I don't believe. I think he was able to communicate, but I don't think
he had. Okay. So he could just... That's surprising that they wouldn't just snarf him, but depending on how old he was when they found him. Well, yeah, most of them end up dying, right? And poor Cliff Curtis gets it good.
Yeah, Billy. He's so great. I just love him as a performer. What an interesting, like, he's there for Danny, but then he really goes above and beyond. Like, they start just straight up killing people together. They start picking off the knot with their guns. It seemed a little bit extreme, but...
I mean, they're murderers.
Well, they are.
They were trying to murder Abra.
Yeah, that's true. But apparently in the book, they all die from the measles.
What?
Yeah, like they're so vulnerable to, they've lived over like all these like centuries, but they've never built up the ability to withstand like human like the common cold, or like they can still get sick. So the measles is what takes them down.
I do think in this case, what they did with the shootout is the better way to go. I don't think measles would have been as satisfying. So
it's almost like taking down the aliens in Independence Day with the common cold.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I was very satisfied to see Barry the Chunk get shot, you know.
Barry the Chunk.
He was so creepy when they roll up to Eddie. Jacob Tremblay.
Yeah. Don't you think Jacob Tremblay would have been a really good choice for a young Danny?
Yeah, because we have that sequence at the beginning where he does try to recreate the trike scene rolling over the carpets. He was certainly better than the miniseries, Danny, this one. But no, you're absolutely right. Jacob Tremblay does have that kind of like stoic nature that the OG did. So, yeah, I'm hoping we get to see Danny Torrance as the new Halloran in a potential. Yeah. But is that likely to happen? Probably not, right?
Probably not, because apparently people didn't invest money or time into Dr. Sleep in the theaters. It's just a bummer because Mike Flanagan did a really great job.
Where do you think they missed the mark on selling it? Because it seemed like it would have been a no-brainer.
I think
anything associated with The Shining had hit.
I don't honestly think that they missed the mark. I think people had a really tough time swallowing the idea that there was going to be a sequel to The Shining after all these years. Okay. And it's not fair because The Shining has been around for 43 years, and it's like a classic. Right. And people really needed to realize this wasn't supposed to be like better than it. It was a continuation. But
I'm curious. I think I want to go back and look at the commercial for it, the trailer, see what they were kind of emphasizing. Because I don't love the hat. I know that's part of her character, but it might kind of look goofy to people who aren't, open-minded.
Yeah,
If they really emphasize Danny being like a drunk and stuff at the beginning, maybe it just looked like such a downer of a movie.
Sure.
But I don't know for sure. I'm going to have to look at that trailer again.
Yeah. I mean, I think that something they could have done better was explaining like the backstories of each of the characters from The Knot. Like Rose the Hat is from like Ireland in the 1890s, and she comes over to America. And then she spends all of her time, in the birth of America, basically creating this.
Yeah. I would have liked to know more about that sort of thing.
And I think that makes sense that she has this old hat. It's not just something she got.
That would have made more sense.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I didn't know that. That's good stuff.
She was also supposed to be described as like one of the most beautiful people you'd ever seen. And I think it's really easy to like a cult leader.
Yes. I mean, when you put it like that, the hat totally works. And in the opener with the hat and the flowers and the magic hat made it that much creepier when they're luring in the kid to suck dry.
Yeah.
And there was good fight sequences, too. I loved when she was flying. She got like knocked out of Abra's bedroom, and just tossed and turned.
In the grocery store, when she's just blown back from the milk. Yeah.
Yeah, I dug the effects as a whole. I think it's an unsung hero here.
Yeah, they did some really cool stuff with Danny in his room, and like that room upstairs. They did some cool stuff in there too, and played with the mirror and like the red rum stuff callbacks.
Right,
that's
right.
I thought they did a good job with that. I just think people need to maybe give this another shot.
Yeah, I did that and I was pleased. I want you to watch the director's cut now, because
definitely
I think it was way better from what I remember seeing. It's the like theatrical cut. I thought it was a little
more minutes of footage and story that I need to.
Yeah, because I don't know what they would take out, but I digress. That's our Shining and Dr. Sleep cast, isn't it?
Yeah, that's that.
Well, but, friends, don't forget to subscribe and share
like
and
it. Do all the nice things for us. Do all the things for us.
Edible arrangements would be nice. But until then, stay alive.